Good morning, everyone. It is Monday, August 14th, 2017. I hope all of you guys had a very nice weekend. It was beautiful weather here in Wisconsin. Both days were sunny and in the upper 70s, and so it was a beautiful time to get outside if you chose to do so or had any last-minute yard work to get done before kids start up in school here in a couple weeks. I chose the other route. I chose the indoor path, and that was because this weekend was the start of the English Premier League, which for me is like opening 5 or 10 or 15 presents on Christmas morning. As many of you know, soccer is my favorite sport, and so I watched 2 games on Saturday and 2 games on Sunday, and I was happy as a clam. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. I thank you very much for listening to our daily format during training camp. We have 20 to 25 minute podcasts every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday through the conclusion of training camp. Feel free to send me a message on Twitter or send me an email. My handle on Twitter is @Michael_Cohen13, and my email address is michael.cohen@jrn.com. Send me an email and let me know what you think of the podcast, if there's anything you'd like me to discuss, and if you just want to say hello, that's okay too. Well, it was a fairly quiet weekend for the Green Bay Packers. As all of you know, they played their first exhibition game Thursday night against the Philadelphia Eagles. So Friday they did not practice, Saturday they did not practice, and Sunday they had an advanced practice, which is what Mike McCarthy has started doing in recent years, where once a week leading up to the regular season, they dedicate one practice to their opponent in week one, so in this case, Seattle. So Sunday's practice was a Seattle practice, and what that means is they're not necessarily going through fundamentals and all that kind of stuff, all the different drill work that you see out at Ray Nitschke Field, and instead they start to do things specifically for the Seattle Seahawks, and that way, you know, as the weeks go by and you get into the regular season, the players are familiar with the concepts, they know generally what's expected of them, and so the week one preparation is a little bit smoother once that part of the calendar rolls around. So the Packers will be back on Ray Nitschke Field tomorrow, Tuesday, for their first open practice since playing the Philadelphia Eagles, and I think that really the most important thing that everyone is curious about right now are injuries. So I've got my big long list here, and I will sort of run down from top to bottom where the Packers stand with all of their different injury woes. Undrafted wide receiver Colby Pearson, number one, still has an ankle issue that he is dealing with. He dropped out of family night practice at Lambeau Field last weekend, and it was a nasty-looking injury where he was down on the sidelines for a little while. Saw him in the locker room yesterday, walking around, didn't have a boot on or anything, but it looked like there might have been still some bruising on that ankle, so not quite back to practice for him yet. Number 19, Malachi Dupree, the rookie wide receiver. He is in the concussion protocol after absorbing that vicious hit from Eagles safety Trey Sullivan over on Thursday night. And so once players are in the concussion protocol, they are prohibited from speaking to the media until they exit the concussion protocol. And in order to exit the concussion protocol, you have to be cleared by an independent neurologist. So some doctor that is not affiliated with the Packers. You have to go see that person. They have to test you. They have to agree that you no longer have symptoms and you no longer are concussed. And then you can go back to practice and all these types of things that come along with exiting the protocol. Same thing goes for Demaryius Randall, cornerback number 23. Randall got hit with a brutal blindside unnecessary block by wide receiver Bryce Treggs of the Eagles. It was essentially a play where Randall was flowing to his right, trying to chase the ball carrier on a running play, and Treggs came in from the left and basically put his head and his forearms right through Demaryius Randall's neck. And so you could see as Randall was on the sideline getting ready to be carted into the locker room, he was pretty woozy. He looked kind of out of it, and there was no sign of him in the locker room yesterday. So we'll have to see how long it takes for each of those guys to exit the concussion protocol. We've seen guys be out of the protocol within a day or two. We've seen guys go through an entire season where they're in the protocol. If you look at what happened to Sam Shields last year, he suffered that concussion in week one against Jacksonville, and he never came back. Now, obviously, that's an extreme example, but there have even been some players in my 2 years here that have been in the concussion protocol for 6, 7, 8 weeks. And so it's really an individual case-by-case basis, and you can't offer any sort of a definitive timeline for these guys. They all progress at their own rates, and they all have setbacks at different periods of time, depending on, you know, what's going on neurologically. So we'll keep you up to date on those two guys, but it seems like at least for the near future, we won't see either one of them on the practice field. Kentrell Bryce, the safety, I don't know if he broke his finger, but during the game, he left in the first half and didn't come back. And I talked to him in the locker room Thursday night, and basically he said that his finger looked kind of weird, like it was out of place, and so he popped it back into where it was supposed to be, and then he said he was going to get x-rays. So I don't know if it was actually broken, but at some point it was dislocated, and Bryce popped it back in, and apparently didn't really think anything of it. Cornerback Devon House, number 31. House remains sidelined with a hamstring injury. This is definitely more of a precautionary thing than it is a serious injury issue. You know, House is a guy that the Packers know exactly what they're getting from him. They don't have to worry about whether or not he needs a certain number of reps to get ready because he's not young and he's not inexperienced. So this is simply erring on the side of caution with a player that's going to be extremely important to this defense. So he could come back at some point this week. McCarthy described it more as a day-to-day type situation. But as of, you know, over the weekend anyway, Devon House was not on the practice field. Dimitri Goodson and Vince Beagle, number 39 and 45, they've been out for a while. They're still out. Goodson still recovering from the torn ACL that he suffered last November. And Vince Beagle had foot surgery, of course, during OTAs, so he is not back on the practice field yet. Number 67, Don Barkley. Barkley had what looked like a pretty severe injury against the Philadelphia Eagles. It was a screen play, and the camera angle does not show exactly what happened to Barkley, so I'm not totally sure what happened, but basically he was in severe pain on the ground, ended up hopping off the field without putting any weight on his injured leg. Saw him in the locker room on Friday, I think it was, and he was wheeling around in a scooter, so he had his foot in a boot, and then he keeps his leg at a right angle and puts his knee and his shin down on this little cart, and then he pushes himself with the other leg. You'll see that a lot, or hear that a lot, with guys in the locker room. But there seems to be a little bit of good news there. Mike McCarthy said that the news that they got about Barkley is not as serious as they once thought it to be. He didn't share any specifics, and when I tried to get Barkley to give me a little insight on his ankle injury Friday, he did not want to talk about it. So we'll have to wait and see with Barkley, but McCarthy anyway sounded encouraged by the early results. Tight end Richard Rodgers, number 82, suffered a broken finger in the final practice before the exhibition game against the Eagles. It was in a one-on-one drill where it's one receiver or tight end against one cornerback or safety. And Rodgers went to catch a pass from Brett Hundley that hit right off the tip of one of his ring fingers. And Richard Rodgers said yesterday that it ended up breaking the tip of one of his ring fingers. No dislocation, nothing like that. But he was able to practice yesterday wearing like a thick kind of padded glove situation going on there. It didn't really prevent him from catching the football. Obviously, it's not comfortable, but he was out there. Whether or not he plays against Washington this week is yet to be seen, but at the moment, he needs to wait for his broken finger to heal. Number 85, tight end Bo Sandlin, remains out with a knee injury. Sandlin dropped out of practice very early in training camp, and he was wearing an immobilizer on his knee for a long time. He has gotten rid of that, so he's walking around normally when we see him in the locker room, but no indication as to when he will be back on the field. And last but not least, rookie defensive lineman Montrevious Adams, number 90. Adams was the third-round pick out of Auburn. He had foot surgery as well after hurting himself in one of the non-padded practices. He had a stress fracture, I think it was, in his foot. And so he is up against the timetable, excuse me, up against the clock, rather, to see if he can get back in time for the regular season. And the Packers could definitely use him. The veteran players speak very highly of him, especially as a pass rusher. So it would be a big boost if the Packers can get him back before the start of the regular season. That was a long list, but that's where we're at with injuries. The reason I shared the numbers of players today is because I got one request to include numbers a little bit more frequently, maybe for some guys that people don't know a lot about. Now, I know I listed numbers of guys that people do know about there, but for some of the young players, the rookies, they don't necessarily recognize what they look like out on the field in terms of physical dimensions or demeanor or maybe some very recognizable gloves or cleats. And so I had a couple requests to mention the numbers of the young players. So just wanted to do that with the injuries. So that way, if you see a certain player, if you're out at practice and you see a certain player on the side of the field with no pads, you can look over and say, oh, you know, that's 19, that's Malachi Dupree, or oh, that's 23, that's Demarius Randle. So hopefully that helps some of you who are interested in learning more of the numbers on this year's team. One little quick last tidbit as it relates to injuries. Mike McCarthy said on Friday that the Packers submitted clips of the hits on Demarius Randle and Malachi Dupree, both of which caused concussions. They submitted those clips to the league for review because the Packers thought they were illegal hits. And if there is any information about forthcoming fines to either Trey Sullivan or Bryce Treggs, I'll be sure to get that to you guys as well. But interesting that the Packers felt so strongly about those hits that they turned them into the league. I agree with both of them. But generally, you don't see those types of hits in exhibition games anyway, so it was a little bit of a weird twist in that regard. So now we get closer and closer to this Washington game. The Packers will fly to Washington on Friday, and they will play Saturday night. It's their third trip to Washington in as many years. I've gone every season that I've been on the beat, once in the regular season, once in the playoffs, and now for an exhibition game. And so, spinning forward what we saw Thursday night against the Eagles, I think the biggest area that needs to be cleaned up from this first game to the second game is tackling. I mean, this is not necessarily a defense that has tackled very well in recent years, and I know that that's not news to any of you that watch the team regularly, but man, it was ugly against the Philadelphia Eagles. Really, really ugly. I know the Packers won the game. Obviously, the result doesn't matter, but, you know, they were terrible tackling, especially their starting defense and their first and second team defense. It was really remarkable how bad they were. My colleague Ryan Wood wrote a story about it, so if you want to read more on their tackling issues, be sure to check out jsonline.com or packersnews.com. But essentially, there were 7 missed tackles alone in the first half, and that's a pretty conservative number. You know, I'm thinking off the top of my head, and I can look at Morgan Burnett missing a tackle, Joe Thomas missing a tackle, Clay Matthews, Quentin Rollins, Kevin King. And this is not me reading off a list. This is just what I can remember from seeing the game live and then watching the tape again the next day. And, you know, the touchdown that the Eagles scored early in the game is sort of, you know, the pinnacle of disaster when it came to tackling. You looked at that play and, first of all, Clay Matthews got 2 hands on the Eagles quarterback Carson Wentz and could not bring him down for a sack. Then Wentz steps up in the pocket and throws a pass to his wide receiver, Mac Hollins, and Hollins proceeds to stiff-arm rookie corner Kevin King to the ground, and then Quentin Rollins dives at him and tries to make a play, and he sheds Quentin Rollins to the ground, and Hollins turns it into, it was either a 36 or a 38-yard touchdown. So you're talking 3 missed tackles by 3 players who are going to be extremely important to this year's defense, all on one play. And that play ended in the end zone for the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, there were some reasons why the players thought the tackling performance was so sketchy, you know, early in the training camp process. And so the biggest theory that was thrown around was that under the new terms of the collective bargaining, which I believe dates back to 2011, the amount of tackling that you can do in training camp and OTAs is zero, essentially. So OTAs, of course, have no pads, which means that any sort of tackling drills or contact drills immediately come with 15 asterisks at the end of it, because you have no idea if anything that is done in pads is going to carry over when it comes to tackling specifically. Then during training camp, players obviously wear pads and there's a lot of hitting and things like that, but there's no tackling to the ground. And so what the players do instead is called thudding up, thudding being T-H-U-D-D-I-N-G. And what that means is, let's say I'm the ball carrier and Tom Silverstein, my colleague, is the linebacker and he's coming at me. What a normal situation would be is Tom would have to tackle me to the ground, and I would have to end up on the ground. That is no longer allowed, and so instead what the players have to do is run toward the other person. So Tom is coming at me, he wraps two hands around me so that we collide chest to chest, and then that's it. He can't bring me to the ground. It's not his responsibility to drive me backward and take me off my feet and plant me into the ground. It's essentially two people coming together in, you know, I guess the best way to describe it would be a really, 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 really forceful hug, as funny as that may sound. So Tom comes over, he wraps both of his arms around my shoulders while I'm carrying the ball, and then he has to let go. And so the thing that can be tricky about this is guys can get really sloppy with their technique. If you know that you don't have to tackle somebody to the ground, and so there's no risk of them breaking that tackle and picking up extra yards, you don't necessarily have to be as proficient, as cognizant. You don't have to pay attention as much to the different technique aspects of it. So you don't always have to keep your head up. You don't always have to make sure that you're targeting the right spot. Instead of, you know, putting your head into their shoulder or their chest, you're keeping your head up and your neck up so that your helmet is not part of the tackle. These are all the fundamental things that you hear players talk about that sort of go out the window at times in this thudding up system. So why is that such a big deal? Well, when you get to the first exhibition game, like the Packers did against the Eagles, they hadn't tackled anybody since January of the year before when they lost to the Falcons in the NFC Championship game. And even though these guys have tackled since they were probably, you know, some of them 5 and 6 years old, it's like anything. If you don't do it for the better part of a year, you're going to be sloppy. And so the Packers were really, really sloppy. You saw guys missing tackles. You saw poor technique, poor angles, all kinds of things. Rookie Josh Jones missed a tackle. That's another one that just popped into my head. So Josh Hawkins missed tackles. He had two of them, I think. So it was all over the place. It wasn't just the starters. It wasn't just the backups. It wasn't just the veterans. And it wasn't just the young guys. And so that was the biggest theory, that essentially these guys were rusty. It had been so long since they tackled anybody that some of the things you have to pay attention to went out the window. The second theory that was posited by some of the players in the locker room, and this sort of goes hand in hand with the technique thing, but it's a little different. Essentially, I was talking to inside linebacker Joe Thomas, and he said that part of it was technique for sure, but the other part he thinks is that everybody was just so fired up to actually be playing in a real football game again that you get excited and you just want to hit somebody and hit somebody and hit somebody. And so you're not necessarily thinking about the technique, the angle, the where your hand placement is, all these different types of things that you're supposed to consider. And so in that regard, it kind of goes together with the technique aspect. If you're so fired up that you, you know, just want to go in there and level somebody, and you couple that with not having leveled anyone since January, then, you know, it's reasonable to assume that technique would not be the first thing on your mind and it might go out the window. So you can sort of see how those two things are interconnected. But the bottom line is that the Packers absolutely need to clean this up and clean it up in a hurry, because if this was a regular game, they would have given up so many extra yards that it would have been a real problem, and especially concerning when you see guys like Clay Matthews, Quentin Rollins, Morgan Burnett. When you see those types of players missing tackles, guys that you know the Packers have to count on every single game, that's where you start to get a little bit more concerned. Two more interesting things to keep an eye on as we get closer and closer to this second exhibition game. So the Packers have two open practices, I think it is, this week, one Tuesday and one Wednesday, if my memory serves. And so if you're out at practice, take a look at wide receiver Geronimo Allison. This is a guy that many of you remember from last season as a player that was an undrafted rookie coming into training camp out of Illinois, sort of surprised everyone by having a tremendous training camp, but then he doesn't make the 53-man roster and winds up on the practice squad. And then in late October, there's some injuries to the wide receivers, you know, Jared Aberderis among them, and the Packers need somebody. So they call up Allison, he signs to the active roster, and the rest is pretty much history. He has a great end to the regular season and playoffs. He's a big contributor, and the Packers believe he's going to be a significant contributor moving forward. But the reason I want you to pay attention to him if you're out at practice is not necessarily what he's doing as a receiver, but take a look at what he's doing on special teams. And so I'm sure many of you have heard the old adage that the fastest way to the roster for young players is to contribute on special teams. And basically what that means is when you're a rookie, it's difficult to unseat the veterans on offense or defense for significant playing time. So if you want to play right away, bust your tail on special teams and really impress the coaches there, because that's where young players are used exponentially more often than veteran players. But Allison was sort of like the exception to the rule last year, because he was, of course, an undrafted rookie, as I mentioned, and he was on the active roster from, I think it was October 24th through the end of the season. So you're essentially talking about 5, 10, about 12 weeks or so. Yeah, if my math is right. And Allison played two special team snaps, just two, and both of them were against Washington. And the reason for that is a couple things. One, he was inexperienced in that he rarely, if ever, played special teams in college at Illinois. And two, his body type is really, really different from your prototypical special teams player. Allison is 6'3 and a half and just barely over 200 pounds, and he might actually even be, well, at least last year, he was 198 going into the season. I think he probably cracked 200 this year because he does look a little bit bigger and stronger. But you're talking about a guy that is really long and really lean and is not a blazing fast guy. He was in the 4.5 range in college when it comes to the 40-yard dash. So that is not your prototypical, ideal, desired body type for special teams. Why? If you're going to be really tall, then you'd want to be heavy, and you'd want to be fast. So think of some of the linebackers that the Packers use, like a Jaron Elliott, that's 6'3 and 260-something pounds, or 50-something pounds. Think about Jordan Tripp, an inside linebacker who's probably about 6'2 and 235, 240. So, in other words, you get the point. If you're going to be that tall, you need to pack a little bit of a punch, and you need to be able to move pretty well to get down the field on all these punt cover, punt return, all these different situations. Now, if you look at those categories, Allison has the size, and he has the speed to compete with those types of players. He can certainly run with linebackers and edge rushers and things like that, but he doesn't have the weight. So he's not a guy that's going to give you a lot of brute force in terms of being a rusher or a blocker or anything like that. Then you look at the other body types, the smaller guys, and those really come in two distinct packages. One package would be something like Marwin Evans or Kentrell Bryce, where you've got decent size around 6 feet, but you are a solidly built player, you know, over 200 pounds, used to hitting people, playing defense, physical players. And in that regard, Allison doesn't really fit either of those molds. And this is not at all to discourage Allison or talk negatively about him. And I'll get to why I'm saying that in a second. I'm just pointing out that when you look at what a special teams unit consists of, Allison does not necessarily fit in some of these, you know, prototypical roles. And then the third type is your really fast speedsters. So we're talking about a Josh Hawkins, a Sam Shields, a Trevor Davis. These guys that they might be skinny, they might be small, they might not be very forceful, but they can just fly up and down the field. And Allison obviously does not fit that mold either. So the Packers have started experimenting with him in different places this year on special teams, just to sort of see what they can get out of him. And he actually played 9 out of 25 special team snaps against the Eagles, which doesn't sound like a lot, but I think there were only 5 players that played more than him, and they were all core special team players from last year. So you're talking about guys like Jordan Tripp, Marwin Evans, Kentrell Bryce, Kyler Fackrell, those types of guys. So that bodes pretty well. It essentially means that one of two things. It means either A, the Packers like what they see out of Allison on special teams, and I don't necessarily think that's the case yet. I don't think they dislike what they see, but I think the second reason for that is they want to evaluate the guy. So usually that's what you see. When guys play a ton in exhibition games or when young guys play a lot, it usually means one of two things. Either the coaches like what they're seeing from this young player, so they're giving them more reps, or they haven't made up their mind about this young player, so they want to put him out there as long as possible and see what the player can do. And that's where I think Allison is on special teams. So you saw him play as a rusher on the punt team. You saw him play as a gunner on the punt team. You saw him play as a frontline player on the kick return team, one of the guys responsible for blocking. And so he's really moved around a little bit to all different areas. And Allison said he's starting to feel more and more comfortable with it, that the Packers have found ways to use his skill set and his size to his advantage, and that he would like to contribute on special teams if he can. Now, I know probably some of you are saying, well, why does it matter if he contributes on special teams? They can just get somebody else to do it. And they probably could. But when it comes to these young players, these guys in their first, second, third, maybe even their fourth season, you almost have to think of their roster spots as having double the value that they normally do. So, of course, your base value is what you do on offense or defense. So if you're a running back, it's how you run the football. If you're a linebacker, it's all the skills that go along with being a linebacker. But the second set of value that each player carries is whatever they can or can't contribute on special teams. So consider a guy like Joe Thomas. He is a core special teams player and a starter on defense. Whoa, excuse me, what a voice crack. I must still be in puberty here. That was a bad one. So Joe Thomas, a guy that plays a ton on defense and a ton on special teams. You're essentially getting double the value out of one spot on your 53-man roster. Another example of that would be Jayron Elliott or Kentrell Bryce or Aaron Ripkowski, essentially your core special teams players. And you want all your young players to contribute somewhere on special teams because then you're maximizing their space on the 53-man roster. So Allison is not in danger of missing, you know, the cutoff. I would be shocked if he doesn't make the team. But he is essentially more valuable to the Packers if he can expand his repertoire and play a little bit on special teams, which is not something he did at all last season. And as I mentioned earlier, there are some exceptions to the rule. Devontae Adams doesn't play special teams. Martellus Bennett doesn't play special teams. Who else doesn't play? You know, Clay Matthews and Nick Perry don't play special teams. Now, I know that several of those players that I named are star players, but every so often you do have a skill position player who doesn't, you know, contribute on special teams. Jared Cook last year. In other words, it's not a usual, typical thing for a young player to be scotch-free when it comes to special teams responsibilities. And then the last item on today's podcast is a roster move for the Packers. They decided to bring in long snapper Brett Goode, who had been the long snapper here for essentially the last decade, with the exception of one season when he suffered a torn ACL late in the year, got replaced, and then became a free agent, and then signed on again by the time training camp ended. So he's really been here every season, you know, dating back the last decade or so, but there have been a couple little blips along the way. Last year, Goode was the long snapper, but became an unrestricted free agent, and the Packers just didn't sign him. They just wanted to wait and wait and wait. And the reason for that is they've been shuffling through a lot of younger guys because they want somebody who is more athletic and can help them more in coverage at the long snapper position, not just somebody that can snap the ball. And because Goode is 32 years old, he's not the greatest athlete. He's not going to give you a whole lot in coverage, but he is an extremely reliable pinpoint snapper. And that's something that the Packers have not been able to find with any of these young guys. You saw at family night, for those of you that were there or watched it on TV, Mason Crosby was 5 of 11 on field goals. Not all of those misses were on Derek Hart, the long snapper, but some of them certainly were. And one of Brett Goode's greatest traits is the ability to snap the ball and have it spin in a way that when the holder catches it, the laces are already in the right spot, and all that person has to do is put the ball down so Mason Crosby can kick it. And that skill is what Derek Hart has not done, what Tabor Pepper has not done, what Rick Lovato has not done, what Jesse Schmidt did not do. These are all the guys dating back to the last year and a half that the Packers have tried at long snapper in between regular seasons. And so Goode is Mr. Reliable. And with Hart struggling, they brought him in. And now he'll compete with Hart one-on-one to see who's going to hold out for the rest of the year. But I would be surprised if Derek Hart wins this job. I just think that if they're going to go through the struggle of bringing Brett Goode back here halfway through camp, that that's going to be your guy. Unless Goode goes off the rails or Hart becomes some sort of a tremendously accurate snapper, I think you're going to look at Brett Goode as your starter in week one. So I'm sure all of you were riveted with that long snapper discussion to close out today's podcast, but it's a valuable position, and when Mason Crosby is having trouble kicking field goals, it's something that is really worth examining, even though it's a guy that most people would never recognize on a street and would never see in an advertisement. But now when you see number 61 out there, you'll know that it's Brett Goode, and it's the guy that has snapped for essentially the last decade for the Packers. That's all I've got for you on the Monday episode of the Packers podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Again, we have daily podcasts Monday through Friday during training camp. So thank you for tuning in, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow. It's a matter of what they do. Are you man enough? Big and bad enough? Are you gonna let them shoot you down when the evil flies and you burn?